अथ श्रीललिता त्रिशती स्तोत्रम् अतिमधुरचापहस्तामपरिमिता मोदबाणसौभाग्या अरुणामतिशयकरुणामभिनवकुलसुन्दरीं वन्दे हयग्रीव उवाच ककाररूपा कल्याणी कल्याणगुणशालिनी कल्याणशैलनिलया कमनीया कलावती कमलाक्षी कल्मषघ्नी करुणामृतसागरा कदम्बकाननावासा कदम्बकुसुमप्रिया कन्दर्पविद्या कन्दर्पजनकापाङ्गवीक्षणा कर्पूरवीटी सौरभ्यकल्लोलितककुत्कटा कलिदोषहरा कञ्जलोचना कम्रविग्रहा कर्मादिसाक्षी श्रीललिता त्रिशती स्तोत्रम् अतिमधुरचापहस्तामपरिमिता मोदबाणसौभाग्या अरुणामतिशयकरुणामभिनवकुलसुन्दरीं वन्दे हयग्रीव उवाच ककाररूपा कल्याणी कल्याणगुणशालिनी कल्याणशैलनिलया कमनीया कलावती कमलाक्षी कल्मषघ्नी करुणामृतसागरा कदम्बकाननावासा कदम्बकुसुमप्रिया कन्दर्पविद्या कन्दर्पजनकापाङ्गवीक्षणा कर्पूरवीटी सौरभ्यकल्लोलितककुत्कटा कलिदोषहरा कञ्जलोचना कम्रविग्रहा कर्मादिसाक्षिणी कारयित्री कर्मफलप्रदा एकाररूपा चैकाक्षर्येकानेकाक्षराकृतिः एतत्तदित्यनिर्देश्या चैकानन्दचिदाकृतिः एवमित्यागमा बोध्या चैकभक्तिमदर्चिता एकाग्रचित्तनिर्ध्याता चैषणारहिताकृता एला सुगन्धिचिकुरा चैनःकूटविनाशिनी एकभोगा चैकरसा चैकैश्वर्यप्रदायिनी एकातपत्रसाम्राज्यप्रदा चैकान्तपूजिता एधमानप्रभा चैजदनेकजगदीश्वरी एकवीरादिसंसेव्या चैकप्राभवशालिनी ईकाररूपिणी क्षित्री चेप्सितार्थप्रदायिनी ईदृगित्यविनिर्देश्या चेश्वरत्वविधायिनी ईशानादिब्रह्ममयी शेषित्वाद्यष्टसिद्धिदा ईक्षित्री क्षणसृष्टाण्डकोटिरीश्वरवल्लभा ईडिता चेश्वरार्धाङ्गशरीरेशाधिदेवता ईश्वरप्रेरणकरी चेशताण्डवसाक्षिणी ईश्वरोत्सङ्गनिलया चेति बाधाविनाशिनी ईहा विरहिता चेशशक्तिरीशस्मितानना लकाररूपा ललिता लक्ष्मीवाणी निषेविता लाकिनी ललनारूपा సద్దాడిమ పాటలా లలంతి కాల సత్ఫాలా లలాట నయనార్చిత లక్షణోజ్వల దివ్యాంగీ లక్ష కోట్యండ నాయికా లక్షార్థా లక్షణాగమ్యా లబ్ధ కామాలతాతను లలామరాజదనికా లంబి ముక్తాలతాంచితా లంబోదర ప్రసూర్లభ్యా లజ్జాఢ్యాలయవర్జితా హ్రీంకార రూపా హ్రీంకార నిలయా హ్రీం పద ప్రియా హ్రీంకార బీజా హ్రీంకార మంత్రా హ్రీంకార లక్షణా హ్రీంకార జప సుప్రీతా హ్రీంమతీ హ్రీం విభూషణా హ్రీం శీలా హ్రీం పదారాధ్యా హ్రీం గర్భా హ్రీం పదాభిధా హ్రీంకార వాచ్యా హ్రీంకార పూజ్యా హ్రీంకార పీఠికా హ్రీంకార వేద్యా హ్రీంకార చింత్యా హ్రీం హ్రీం శరీరిణీ హకార రూపా హలధృక్ పూజితా హరినేక్షణా హర ప్రియా హరారాధ్యా హరి బ్రహ్మేంద్ర వందితా హయారూఢా సేవితాంఘ్రిర్హయమేధ సమర్చితా హర్యక్ష వాహనా హంస వాహనా హతదానవా హత్యాది పాప శమనీ హరిదశ్వాది సేవితా హస్తి కుంభోత్తుంగ కుచా హస్తి కృత్తి ప్రియాంగనా హరిద్రా కుంకుమాదిగ్ధా హర్యస్వాద్యమరార్చితా హరికేశ సఖీహాది విద్యాహాలామదాలసా సకార రూపా సర్వజ్ఞా సర్వేశీ సర్వమంగళా సర్వకర్త్రీ సర్వభర్త్రీ సర్వహంత్రీ సనాతనీ సర్వానవజ్ఞా సర్వాంగసుందరీ సర్వసాక్షిణీ సర్వాత్మికా సర్వసౌఖ్యదాత్రీ సర్వవిమోహినీ సర్వాధారా సర్వగతా సర్వావగుణవర్జితా సర్వారుణా సర్వమాతా సర్వభూషణభూషితా కకారార్థా కాలహంత్రీ కామేశీ కామితార్థదా కామసంజీవినీ కళ్యా కఠినస్తన మండలా కర
Hello and welcome. Welcome with all my heart to this exquisite and most auspicious coming together in the name of the goddess. We are going to be contemplating, meditating, chanting, and practicing various forms of experiential invocation to Shakti, in the form of the Mahavidyas, the 10 great energies of wisdom and knowledge from the tantric tradition. So, welcome to all of you who are here on the live call, and to all of you who are listening via the MP3. Welcome to all of you from different parts of the United States, North and South America, and also those of you who are calling in from Europe and from the Pacific Rim. It's really, as always, a delight to feel the gathering of our various personal energy forms as we come together in this Sangam, in this gathering. So this three-week teleclass will include the talks and interactions that occur on the weekly call. And it will also include meditations, mantras, and a series of exercise practices that you can do at home. We'll have some also some guided audio meditations that you'll be receiving. And we'll have, and as many of you know, this is one of the most vibrant aspects of this teleconference gathering. We'll also have the listserv in which people can share, ask questions, talk about what's going on with you. And I will answer questions on the listserv, as well as questions that you feel are too private to share with everybody, which you can address me, send to me, and I'll answer them privately. So this evening, as we begin our immersion, our leap into the energies of the Shaktis, I'd like to ask you to settle yourself in a comfortable posture, to become present to the breath, to sense the breath as it flows easily in and out of your nostrils and down into your heart. And as you sit, have the feeling that the energies that have been flowing through your senses, and which will, of course, continue to flow through your senses during our practice this evening, but that the energies that have been flowing through your senses and engaging all the different aspects of your life today and this week and this month are being gently invited to flow in with the breath and take seat in the heart. And with that inner awareness, that sensory awareness, turned inward, turned in towards the heart, we're going to chant the invocatory mantras. And in this class, we're going to chant some seed mantras, bija mantras of the goddess, which many of you here will be familiar with because you've practiced them with me before, or perhaps you've heard them in a ceremony dedicated to the goddess. These mantras are specifically seed syllables that bring the energy of Shakti, the energy of the divine feminine, the energy of the goddess, forward within our bodies and draw that energy towards us through the atmosphere. And the mantras which we'll be chanting along with a recording that you'll hear in a moment, the mantras are Om, which of course is the primordial sound that anyone who's ever taken a yoga class is very used to chanting. It's actually a mantra of manifestation. Aim, Aim, spelled A-I-M and pronounced as so, or A-Y-E-E-M. Aim is the condensed sound of primordial speech, of knowledge and intuition. And it's associated with the creation through vibratory sound as well as with the goddesses of speech, Saraswati and Matangi. So Aim and Om are both mantras of creativity, which is one of the primordial qualities of the divine feminine. She is creative. She is all acts of creation and creativity. The third syllable in the chant is Hrim, which is spelled H-R-E-E-M, if you want to do it phonetically. Hrim. Hrim is perhaps the most well-known and in certain ways empowered of all the seed mantras related to the goddess. Hrim is literally the mantra of the goddess's specific power of manifestation, so it goes with the other two, with Om and Aim. And it's often called the primordial goddess seed, the primordial goddess bija. And it's one of the qualities of a seed mantra, of a bij mantra, all of these bij mantras, is that they are said to contain the form of the divine that they invoke. The mantra itself contains the form of the divine in exactly the way that an acorn contains the fully developed form of an oak tree, but in seed form. And to use the mantra, to use the metaphor that's most popular in Indian mythology, the way a vast banyan tree is contained in the tiny seed, the entire power and form of the goddess is contained in these seed mantras. So they're really very important and significant. So Om, Aim, Hrim are the mantras of among the goddesses. Om is the mantra of the goddess Tara, who is known as the boat that carries us across the ocean of samsara. She's the goddess's liberator. Aim, which is the mantra of empowered speech. Hrim, which is the mantra of manifestation, the goddess's manifestation. The fourth sound is Kleem, K-L-E-E-M. Again, phonetically, Kleem is the seed mantra of primordial pleasure. Literally, Kleem is the divine pleasure that arises through our unity with the divine, and it's associated both with Krishna, who is the masculine form of supreme love, and also with Kali, who is one of the Mahavidya goddesses, and is also the goddess who holds the paradox of intense fierceness and intense love. So Om, Aim, Hrim, Kleem. The next word in the mantra sequence is Chamundaye. Chamunda is the form of the goddess Kali, who destroys obstructions, who dissolves all difficulties. And the final word in this mantra sequence is Viche, which means cut. So essentially what the mantras invoke in us is the creative power that manifests worlds and universes, and also manifests within us the powers of awakening and liberation. It invokes the supreme capacity for pleasure, the erotic longing that can both create the desire that leads to samsara, and also the longing for spiritual fulfillment that leads to liberation. And finally, it invokes the power of the goddess that destroys obstructions. So if you'll settle yourself into an upright meditation posture, allowing the sitting bones to sink into the seat or the floor, allowing the torso to rise up from that grounded base, sensing the chest lifting and opening, and the shoulder blades releasing onto the back. Taking a deep breath in and releasing the breath. Once again, another deep breath in and release. And we'll begin to play the mantras. You can chant along with the mantras, or if you prefer, simply listen. Recognizing that with each repetition of these sounds, we are invoking the primordial power of the Shakti, the energy of transformation, both within us and within that power that connects us all through the waves of sound and understanding that creates a sangam.
Om, Aim, Hrim.
Again, focusing on the breath. We ask that through the power of our practice, all beings may experience happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May we experience equanimity beyond grasping, hatred, and dullness. And may we know the equality of all that lives. And as we flow into our first meditation of the evening, please begin as we always do, by allowing your attention to tune itself to the breath. In this meditation, we're going to recognize the Shakti both as the life force that's breathing us, as the elements of the body, as our thoughts, and as the physical world. So this is a practice for beginning to get a sense of what it really is to be lived, breathed, to be enjoyed by the goddess, and to enjoy the goddess. So as you allow the breath to flow in and flow out, have the understanding that you're being breathed by a vast and loving presence, the life force of the universe is flowing in and out of your body. Even though you may be conscious of making a slight effort to bring the breath in and out, you don't need to do that. You can allow yourself to be breathed by the goddess, manifesting as the prana, as the universal life force that breathes through everything that lives. Be aware now of the flesh, the bones, the solidity within your body. Consider that your skin is made of vibrating energy particles, cells and molecules that are the visible form of Shakti, of life energy. See if you can, for this moment, consider your skin as being made of solidified particles of Shakti, solidified particles of the goddess's energy. Consider your bones. Sense the solidity and structure of your bones. Tune into the other fleshly elements in your body, the organs, the fat, and and recognize that they too are made of energy, that they're solidified, densified forms of the goddess of Shakti. Just have this thought. My skin, my flesh, my bones, the organs in my body, all composed of particles and subatomic particles of matter. All these are condensed Shakti. All of this is made of the goddess. Consider your blood and the fluids of your eyes, the phlegm, the mucus in your body, all the different forms of fluid in your body. And consider them as fluid forms of the goddess. Recognize that as these fluids run through your body, so fluid runs through the earth, falls from the sky as rain, flows as rivers, as oceans, and that all these fluids are made of watery particles of the goddess. And consider the air you breathe, the air that fills your lungs, the air that flows through different parts of your body as the pranas, the vital energies. Consider also the fiery elements of your body, the heat within your body, the neurons with their electrical impulses, and recognize that they too are aspects of the goddess. They too are Shakti. And finally, be aware of the invisible space inside each cell and the space that surrounds your body. And consider that space too is an expression of the goddess. Realize that as thoughts flow through your mind, as your intelligence processes these words that you're hearing, as the power of your will directs your mind to meditate according to these instructions, recognize that these two are aspects, movements of the goddess. Your mind, so fluid, so filled with energy, so creative, is the form of the goddess as your own creative power. Your breath, the breath that keeps you alive, the form of the goddess as your life force. Allow yourself to recognize that every single particle of your experience is an aspect of Shakti, of the life force energy at the heart of the world. Recognize that in the words of the chant that we heard at the very beginning, the goddess takes form as the world, and the world is her form. Her form, and these are the words of a hymn called Sri Lalita Trishati, Sri Lalita Trishati, the 300 names of the goddess Lalita. Her form is solidified bliss. So recognize your experience as solidified bliss. Take a deep breath in, let your breath go, and if you like, you can open your eyes. This class, Energies of Transformation, is a continuation of a series that we actually began in 2010. I'm amazed that it was that long ago, but in that class, which was also called Energies of Transformation, we began talking about the 10 Mahavidyas, the wisdom deities who are part of the esoteric tantric tradition. We began that class with an overview of Shakti and specifically the role of these particular Shaktis. And then we practiced and discussed three particular goddesses, Tara, Bhuvaneshwari, and Lalita. And a lot of people asked me when we were going to practice with the other goddesses, since there are 10 of them. And I was somewhat hesitant, especially because some of these wisdom goddesses are extremely fierce. And yet, as I've gotten more deeply familiar with them and written the book that includes some very deep explorations of the fierce goddesses, and especially after the class on Kundalini that we did in 2012, I began to feel that indeed it is time for us to dance again with the wisdom goddesses. So let me begin by speaking a bit about sacred energies and their significance for us, and also to give you some of my intentions for this time together. The first thing I want to say, and it's very obvious to some of you, but maybe not so obvious to some of you, sacred energies are real. And not only that, they're not just abstract, but sacred energies come in specific personalities, and they perform specific cosmic functions. This is one of the insights that the Indian goddess traditions, the Indian polytheistic traditions, hold and take for granted. And yet there, it's an understanding that is not always so easy for Westerners. So one of the reasons why it's so powerful to practice with goddesses, or male deities for that matter, but in this class we're practicing with goddesses, is simply so that we can learn to presence and begin to identify the ways in which these very powerful, very subtle energies are in fact extremely present with us, and also begin to identify how they help us and how we can bring them into our lives more deeply and receive their help. You know, we feel sacred energies often moving through us in as our longings, as our higher desires, as the forces that govern our different awakenings. Each one of us has had many, many different awakenings over the course of our lives. We feel these energies as different forms of strength, as the power that lets us do things that ordinarily seem impossible. I was talking to a friend of mine whose practice is very much about surrendering herself to the higher powers. And she tells a story about how, as a young woman, she decided she was going to do the Ironman triathlon, the Iron Woman, in her case, triathlon. She was not particularly athletic, but she had enormous willpower. And she essentially said to God, she said to the divine, if you'll help me, if you'll uphold me, I'll do everything that I have to do in order to make myself ready for this. And she said that when she made that connection between her commitment to making a particular effort in a particular direction and asking for the grace of the divine, she felt this extraordinary power running through her, and she actually became a very, very well-known figure on the triathlon circuit in her early years, and learned how to train, and then how when she was doing the triathlon, to simply give herself up to the power of the divine and let it carry her, and she won again and again and again. I think that, you know, many of us have had this kind of experience of when we put in effort in a focused way and then ask for grace, ask for help, that we discover that we are actually able to, I'm going to use the word in quotes, to do things, to think things, to know things that we actually can't think and know and do in our ordinary state of consciousness. So the sacred energies, the powers of the sacred energies are so enormously benign in our worldly life. And part of what they do is we learn to invoke them, even if we learn to invoke them for mundane purposes, is they gradually lead us, show us how they can transform us, both our body and our mind, to make us open to their highest gifts, which are really the gift of realizing our complete oneness with the divine, with each other, and with the world. So just a few things about the overview. Shakti, sacred energies, goddess energies, can be experienced on several levels simultaneously. So from a non-dual perspective, the sacred feminine is simply the dynamic face of the infinite. In the tantric tradition, reality is described as having two faces, two tastes, one as pure awareness and the other as pure blissful dynamism. Bliss and power in the tantric tradition are understood to be really the same. Power arises from bliss. Bliss is the expression of power. And the aspect of reality that is pure awareness, pure light, that is the ground of being, as the Buddhists say, is known in the tradition as Shiva. And the bliss, the love aspect of the divine, and its power, its creativity, is known as Shakti, and is known as the feminine, the sacred feminine. So in the Eastern tradition, and this is a, you know, this is a major recognition, power comes from the inner feminine, just as awareness, the capacity for consciousness, comes from the inner masculine. And it's only when these two are in harmony, are functioning together, that we are really able to unfold our real purpose in life. Our purpose being to live in the union of awareness and blissfulness, of being and becoming, of consciousness and power. So, Shakti, the power, bliss of the divine, generates everything that exists out of her own blissful upsurge, her urgent creative eros, the unstoppable desire of the divine to become manifest as universes, as ideas, as feelings, and of course as us. And that creative surge, that divine eros, is the essence of goddess energy, of Shakti. Her power is the life force of the universe. I love to think of Shakti, in the words of Brian Swim, the cosmologist, as the force of allurement. Such a great word, allurement, that draws atoms and molecules together, that allows unicellular creatures to become multicellular creatures and then to become human beings with extraordinary brains and land masses and planets and all the extraordinary things in this universe. So she's the force of allurement that brings all that is together and manifest forms. She's also the force that holds them together, and she's the force that destroys them. So it's in her aspect as the destroyer that she manifests through the tantric tradition as that aspect of the world power that destroys our embeddedness in density. So in that part, in that aspect of herself, Shakti can take away our delusions, dissolve the discursive mind, and awaken us on every level. She's the mediatrix between the physical and the subtle. She's the source of blessing, and she is the only force for true transformation. In other words, genuine transformation occurs through this evolutionary eros of the goddess. Even when we think we're doing it ourselves, it's she who's working through us, through our personal will, to uplift, to up-level, and ultimately to dissolve our feelings of separation. So the truth is that the higher levels of awareness and the subtler experiences of our own soul cannot be accessed without her will, without her energy, without her grace. So the goddesses personify the cosmic forces that we can invoke for, let's say, assistance in our spiritual journey. And in the tantric traditions, as many of you know, this is done on several levels. First of all, the tantric traditions actually include processes for worshipping, for making offerings, physical offerings to physical representations of the deities. But on a subtler level, the tantric traditions teach you how to identify your own body with the goddess, to infuse your body with mantras and in that way bring forth her Shakti. And another way that the tantras invite us to relate to the goddess is through prayer. Simple petitionary prayer. In other words, beseeching the goddess for grace. The poets of the Shakta tradition wrote praise songs to the goddess, most of which were actually prayers. So, and the prayer that all the poets, all the great poets of the Shakta tradition made was the prayer to the goddess to show them her face, to reveal herself to them through the body, through the mind, in her light form, in her form is bliss. And especially in the words of Ramakrishna, who is one of the great, great lovers of the goddess in the form of Kali, he would say to the goddess, O mother, O ma, he called her ma, he called her mother, please show me your liberating face. Hide your face of delusion, and we'll say more about that later, and show me your liberating face. And that prayer, show me your liberating face, is actually one of the invocational prayers that I'd like to invite you to make throughout these weeks. As you get up in the morning, as you go to sleep at night, as you look at your body, and as you work with your own mind and with your meditation practice and with all the complexities of your life, just keep asking the Shakti inside and outside to show you her liberating face, to free you from illusion, to let you see the absolute freedom and love, which is your nature. So, actually, I want to say that one of the best reasons there is for getting to know the wisdom goddesses is actually to learn how to ask for and receive their grace. And a lot of what I want to encourage us to do is just ask for help. You know, Rumi, the great poet, who was also, you know, probably the greatest exponent of all time of the power of bliss and love in our spiritual life, used to say that when you're trying to get to know the divine, you don't do it by saying, I have it together, look at me, I have it so together. You say, I'm helpless. I don't know what to do. I need you. I need your grace. He says, so show the divine your helplessness and your need. Would a beggar go before the king and say, I have houses and gold and jewels? No, the beggar shows his neediness. So that's what we do when we're coming to know the goddess. We begin by asking her to help us to know ourselves as what we are. And then from that place of profound humility, we begin to take her into ourselves and to allow her to reveal to us the deeper truth that she is us, she is alive in us with all her divine powers. So, prayer. And of course, one of the reasons that prayer works, I was, the other day, I was at a workshop in which the question was asked by a Westerner who, you know, is a doctor and an extremely rational being, as so many of us are, and who had always felt uncomfortable with prayer because it reminded him of his fundamentalist Christian childhood, which he had rejected. And he asked, so why does prayer work? Why do we pray? And of course, the reason why it works is simply because the universe is made of Shakti. Every particle of the universe, but especially your own inner universe, is made of condensed Shakti. And that Shakti, which lives as every particle of the world, has, as many of you tantric, those of you, and there are many of you in this class who have studied these texts quite a lot. As you know, the nature of Shakti is will, knowledge, and action. In other words, the Shakti that has become this world has become this world with her powers of will, of knowledge, and of activity. So that power of will, which in when our consciousness is relatively dense is fairly limited and often a source of frustration because we wish for things, we will things, and they don't always come about. The power of knowing when we are in our density, in our confused state, manifests often as the whole web of beliefs and limiting views that keep us stuck in experiencing ourselves as small and experiencing the world as outside us. And our powers of action are mostly partial. So through prayer, what we're actually doing is activating the goddess's expanded, enhanced powers of will, knowledge, and action that are ever present, that are within us and that surround us. And part of what I'd like us to do here is to start to recognize that presence, to tune into that presence, to sense it in and around you, and to remember to ask for divine help, to ask for the goddess to manifest in the form of liberation. So, just for a moment, let's breathe in with a prayer. So you can let your awareness come into the heart, flowing into the space behind your breastbone. I always like to imagine that the breath is flowing in through the front of my chest, as if there were an opening or a softening in the chest wall. And very often as you do that, you can sense the breath as the gentle awakening force of the Shakti caressing your heart. And with your awareness in the heart, with the breath flowing in and out of the heart, ask, O goddess, whose form is love and freedom, please reveal yourself within me. O goddess, whose form is love and freedom, please reveal yourself within me. Let me feel your presence within my body, within my heart, within my mind. Let me feel you as my presence, let me feel your presence within my body, my heart, and my mind. Let me know you as my own self. So with that thought, with that intention, with that prayer, let's enter into the conversation about the Mahavidyas. The Maha means great, Vidya means wisdom or knowledge. So the Mahavidyas, the 10 Mahavidyas or Dasha Mahavidyas, are forms of Shakti who give us the liberating knowledge that allows us, that allows our consciousness to expand beyond the realm of Maya, beyond the realm of separation and confusion. Another way that the Mahavijas are described, they are forms of liberating knowledge, and they're seen, they're shown as goddesses, as, you know, as powers in the form of female figures who carry implements, who have certain iconographies that express different aspects of their nature. But the Mahavijas are also, and this is part of the mystical aspect of them, the Mahavijas are also mantras. In tantric sadhana, in tantric practice, mantra is incredibly significant, and it's significant for two reasons. One is that in the Indian tradition, as in Kabbalah and mystical Judaism, the understanding is that the universe manifests through words. In the beginning was the Word, remember that? The Word was with God and the Word was God. That's the Gospel according to John. And there's this very similar line in one of the Vedas. Both of these traditions, the Hebraic wisdom tradition and the Vedic wisdom tradition, understood words as the fundamental articulation of the energetic vibration that brings all things into manifestation. And in the Vedic and Tantric tradition, words are understood as having the power to create both binding or mayic experience. In other words, words can totally delude us, as we know, through thoughts, through gossip, through spin, through all the different ways we use speech to deepen our illusion. And words can also liberate us. And the words that liberate us are known as mantras. The Kalarnava Tantra is a verse which describes mantra as mananat traite iti mantraha. This is mantra that protects and liberates the mind of the one who repeats it. That is mantra which protects and liberates the mind of the one who repeats it. And what a mantra is, as we said earlier, is a condensed form of the goddess's liberating power. They are sound forms imbued with Shakti, whose purpose is to protect you from the goddess's face of duality or Maya. So when we practice with mantras, we are literally enlisting the goddess in the form of liberating sound in order to free ourselves from our bondage. And for that reason, we're going to be practicing, our main meditation this week is going to be with a series of goddess mantras. The mantra that we'll be working with, and I will send it to you in a written form, is Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Shrim is the form of the goddess which incarnates auspiciousness. And these are mantras that are associated with the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, whom you'll be hearing about later on. The Mahavidyas are part of a tradition in which practitioners approach the goddess both for fulfillment of worldly desires and for liberation. And it's important to understand about them that even though these deities do give you worldly boons, and they have nothing against giving you worldly boons, and I personally believe that who else are you going to turn to for help in the world besides the goddesses? Their particular quality is that no matter why you approach them, they will eventually take you past your worldly desires and give you a yearning for liberation. So even though it's very important to cultivate a clear motivation as you approach the Mahavidyas, also know that their entire tendency is to liberate you. So very much like the 20th century Saint Shirdi Sai Baba, who used to say, I give people what they want so that they will eventually come to want what I have to give them. And this is how the goddesses are. The more intimate you become with her, the more she starts to reveal her nature. And the more you recognize that her subtle inner nature is actually what you want from her. So each of the 10 Mahavidyas represents a particular facet of enlightened consciousness. And one of the truths here that we'll see as these weeks go on is that enlightened awareness has different faces. The Mahavidyas are not the only faces of enlightened awareness, but they pretty much cover the basics. And of course, when we realize this, when we begin to tune into them, it helps us, it certainly has helped me, to understand why different paths and different enlightened teachers will describe enlightenment in quite different ways. You know, sometimes what one teacher says about the enlightened state completely contradicts or seems to contradict what another teacher says. And also what you probably have recognized is that every teacher that you practice with gives a somewhat different transmission than the other teachers. And this is because the Shaktis who act through different spiritual teachers act through them in slightly different ways. And a teacher who's fully conversant with all the different facets of higher consciousness is theoretically able to connect you with the particular Mahavidya who is most related to your karmic patterns or who's the appropriate energy to help you in the direction that you need to take at this time. And as we become more subtle, as each of us goes more deeply into meditation and inner practice, we also begin to get guidance and we begin to receive direction. And often we'll be guided to focus on one of these goddess forms or another. And in fact, what will happen as you practice with the Mahavidyas is that you'll find that your focus on one of the goddesses will often lead you to investigate another because they're so deeply related. So the 10 Mahavidyas include both fierce and peaceful forms of the goddess, or as you know, they're often described as wrathful and beautiful, or as scary and gentle. So they actually arise at the Mahavidyas, the oldest story about the origin of the Mahavidyas comes from the Shiva Purana, which is a very intense mythological text, probably medieval. And the story goes, and you'll recognize this because it's one of the classic goddess stories, the story goes that a demon has received a boon which has allowed him to rule the world, to dominate the world. And this particular demon, they have different names and different stories. This particular demon is called Durgama, and one of his actions has been to dry up all the moisture in the world, all the water in the world. You know how that's a very, very telling indication of what the demonic forces do to our world. They literally dry up the sweetness. It's the essence of life. The fluid of bliss which gives beauty to life. So the gods call upon the goddess Durga to save the world, and of course she does. And after she's done that, after she's restored the peaceful world, the peace of the world, and given the gods back their seats and brought all the waters back unto the earth, filled up the oceans and the rivers. The gods ask her to do one more favor for them and to bring back the teachings of the sacred scriptures, the Vedas, which have been corrupted by the demons. And again, there's a lot of implications to that. So she agrees, and she brings the 10 Mahavidyas out of her body to fight the demons and to cleanse the sacred texts, which are then revealed anew. And we might say that this new revelation of the sacred text is the revelation of the tantras, which are considered to be the form of practice texts that are most suitable for people like ourselves, who tend to be caught up in worldly life and really need a lot of extra mojo to turn inside. So these shaktis, these mahavidyas, actually represent the enlivening power that has to be continually reinfused into the ancient teachings in order to give them relevance for our age. And that's what they do for us. They literally empower us to practice with intense force. The main goddess of the Mahavidyas is Kali, who is the epitome of fierceness. All the other nine deities are often considered forms of Kali, but there is another goddess who is part of this group of goddesses who in over the centuries has become equally powerful and prominent. And as Kali is fierce, Lalita Tripura Sundari, the other main goddess, is the embodiment of sweetness. And it's said that between the two of them, Kali and Lalita Tripura Sundari, can manifest every single aspect of auspicious wisdom in a devotee. So the goddesses, the Mahavidyas, are generally considered to have three basic qualities. They're goddesses who embody fierce power. We'll describe them in a moment. Kali is one. The goddess Bhairavi is another. Tara is another. Bagalamukhi, who's called the crane-headed, is another one of the fierce goddesses. And another type of goddess are the goddesses who embody light, delight, and beauty. Lalita is one of those. Bhuvaneshwari, we'll talk a little bit about her as we go on. Kamala, who's a form of Lakshmi. These are the goddesses of light and beauty. And then there are goddesses who are associated with sound, with words, with mantras. Among these are Matangi, who's an incredibly mysterious and profound goddess, speech goddess. Tara is also associated with words. So I'll just speak for a moment about Kali, because as we know, Kali is really she's probably both the fiercest and the most powerfully transformative of all the goddesses, and the one whom most of us are most familiar with. Kali's name means black. Her color is black. It's actually the blue black of a midnight sky. And that color stands for the absolute void into which all things dissolve at the end of time. And her name, Kali, is also the feminine form of Kala, which is the Sanskrit name for the force of time. So Kali is the shakti of that force of time, which both brings everything to an end, so time is associated with death, but which is also the force of evolution. Because, of course, it's within time that everything grows and evolves. So here we see the two faces of Kali. She's a goddess of death, of destruction, and especially of the death that we face in sadhana as we look into the dissolution of the ego. She's also the force of spiritual growth, of the evolution of consciousness into higher and higher states of awareness. So, according to the tantras, the power of death and the ability to face into our death and to become fearless in the face of death is both the absolute necessity for enlightenment and the gift of Kali. My guru has a section in his autobiography, The Play of Consciousness, in which he talks about a meditation in which he was overwhelmed by a blinding light and realized that he was going to die. And then, literally went into a death state. He was totally terrified. He called out his guru for help. And then he went unconscious. And he said when he came out of that state, he realized that he had died. And from that moment on, he had no more fear of death. So this is the confrontation that that Kali invites us into at a certain point in our sadhana. She gives us the power to die to our small self, which is really the experience that he'd had. Another quality of Kali, of course, in the material world, she manifests as hurricanes and tsunamis and tornadoes. But in our inner life, she's the strongest power of awakening Shakti that we can invoke, because she does have the power to sweep away your smaller desires and literally show you that in yourself that can never die. And this is, I believe, one reason why for so many of us, awakening begins during a time of crisis, of disillusionment or dissolution, when life as you know it seems to be falling away. And when you're in touch with Kali's Shakti, these moments in life when we face loss, when we face ill health, and when eventually we face physical death, we are able with Kali's grace to find the awakening power within that experience. I've collected many stories of people whose awakenings have occurred during terrible moments. One journalist who was working in Bosnia during the war there, and who actually saw the face of Kali in a burned out town. She described this horrific scene of war, and the moment when, as she was looking at it in total horror, the entire scene turned into light. You know, this is the power that of the awakening that can occur through the face-to-face confrontation with Kali. And much of the sadhana of Kali involves offering your negativities, your obstructions, and even your physical body to be dissolved in her light, in her bliss. And we'll be doing that practice in the second week of this class. So the second form of the Mahavijit is Tara, who is a very, like Kali, is a very fierce goddess. She holds a cleaver in one hand and a severed head, which represents the severed head of the false self, in the other. She's often shown standing on the form of Shiva, who represents the ground of being. But Tara's name literally means savior. And she's the goddess that you invoke when what you desire is any form of salvation, salvation from depression, salvation from your own negativities, and ultimately salvation from illusion. The third goddess in the mandala of the Mahavijas is Lalita Tripura Sundari, and we're actually going to be meditating with her later. She is, like Kali, a form of the goddess who can give you complete realization, both worldly and spiritual. But her form is gentle. She is sometimes known as Raja Rajeshwari, which means the goddess of kings, the ruler of rulers. And her iconography presents her both as a queen and also as a deity of of transcendent eroticism. She's the force of desire and longing, the Shakti who invites us to realization through the power of her beauty. And she and Kali are complementary opposite, whereas Kali gives us realization through dissolving our desires. Lalita allures us through higher desires. The fourth in the mandala of goddesses is actually my favorite goddess, Bhuvaneshwari, whose name means Lady of the Worlds. And she is the Shakti who incarnates the bliss that manifests as the physical world. And in the sadhana of the Mahavidyas, after Kali and Tara have dissolved the ego, and Lalita has lifted our worldly desires and turned them into blissful longing for the divine, Bhuvaneshwari manifests as the vision of the universe as the body of the goddess. So that meditation we were doing at the beginning, where we thought of our body as being made of particles of Shakti, is a meditation that's very related to the goddess Bhuvaneshwari. And one of the realizations that you receive from her is the recognition that everything you experience is a part of your awareness, and that your awareness, which is the awareness of the goddess, has become the world. Standing next to Bhuvaneshwari is one of the fiercest and most fiery of all the Shaktis. Her name is Bhairavi. She's sometimes called Tripura Bhairavi. Tripura means three cities. And the three cities are the city of the waking state, the city of the sleep state, the dream state, and the city of the deep sleep state. Bhairavi is pure fire, pure light, and she's intensely wrathful. She's the feminine counterpart of Shiva as the destroyer. And in my experience, Bhairavi is the goddess that you invoke with great care in one of those moments when you're filled with negativity and you really need an atomic power force to dissolve them. Bhairavi is the light of consciousness that can penetrate through all your masks, expose your false ideas, cut through your illusions, and show you the deeper truth. Bhairavi is also a Shakti that you invoke to bring the Kundalini up from the Muladhara chakra and break through the veils that keep Kundalini asleep. So she has the power to actually blaze into your consciousness, blaze through all your obstructions, and purify your consciousness in an instant. The next goddess is another one of my favorites and one of the most mysterious of all of them. Her name is Chinnamasta, and we're going to be practicing with her next week. Chinna means head, so Chinnamasta is the headless goddess. And I think many of you have seen her photograph, paintings of her, which often appear in tantric iconography, maybe because she's so shockingly, she's shocking. She's a very shocking figure. Chinnamasta stands on the prone bodies of a couple engaged in the act of love, and symbolically, they stand for the god of desire, Kama, and his consort, whose name is Delight. And she's standing on this prone couple. In one hand, she holds a sword, and in the other, her own head, which she has just chopped off. So you see her, you see that from her neck, three streams of blood are emerging like a fountain, and one stream is feeding her female attendant on the right, and the other is feeding the female attendant on the left, and the third stream is flowing into the mouth of her severed head. So what do these forms actually mean? Chinnamasta represents the dissolution of the conceptual mind. So that headlessness is the capacity that we receive at certain stages of our practice to see without concepts and ego. It's a profoundly awake state. And she also is a symbol of the upward movement of the awakened kundalini. Because in classical kundalini sadhana, the sexual energy, which normally flows outward into generative activity, is turned upward, flows up through the central channel into the crown. And as it does, it then flows down. It dissolves the barrier of separateness, dissolves your identification with the separate, with the personal self. And then from that state, we're able to literally feed others with our realization. So Chinnamasta is also the image of the spiritual teacher whose enlightened awareness is serving all of those with whom she comes into contact. The next goddess, Dumavati. Dumavati's name means she who is the form of smoke. She's the only one of the goddesses who's really ugly. She's literally a hag, and she's known as the widow. Widows in India were totally marginalized. No matter what their class, a widow was considered unlucky, with no place in normal society. So Dumavati, in my experience, represents the gifts that come to us through disappointment and loss and humiliation. So Dumavati represents a stage in sadhana, and I'm sure you all know it, when everything seems to dry up, when you lose your juice, when you feel no connection to the divine, maybe you're depressed or you just feel like it's not worth it. This is a stage which is completely, radically necessary in our practice. And as anyone who's gone through that, such a phase of sadhana realizes, it actually is the fallow ground in consciousness that allows us to assimilate what we've received in the juicier phases and allows us to then move into the next phase. So Dumavati is a tremendously important stage of consciousness. And in the esoteric traditions of Nepal, she has a secret face as an exquisitely beautiful, erotic goddess of manifestation. So inside Dumavati's dried up, inert state is actually the potential for amazing, transformed, exquisite inner beauty. The next goddess is Bagalamukhi, whose name means crane-faced. She's also known as the Impaler, because her particular gift is to stop anyone and anything dead in its tracks. So she's, in terms of sadhana, she's the completely controlled mind in which not one single thought takes form. She's also a goddess who's often invoked for the magical power to stop your enemies. So she's a very, very powerful, mysterious, and hidden goddess. But in my experience, Bagalamukhi is the power to rein in the destructive power of speech and to give you the energy to stop the mind in meditation. The next goddess is Matangi, who literally acts as the mediator between the higher world and the human world, in the sense that she has the power to bring the ideas of the higher planes of consciousness, which are experienced wordlessly. There are no words in those states. They can't be described. They're non-conceptual. They're pure experience. Matangi is the Shakti who brings those higher states into our being in such a way that it's possible to express them. So Matangi is that Shakti, which brings our higher realizations into expression in our life, especially through writing, through teaching, through art, through dance. She's like the goddess Saraswati. She's a goddess of artistic expression. And finally, the 10th Mahavidya is known as Kamala. Her name means lotus. She's a form of Lakshmi. And she represents fully enlightened worldly life, the life that is lived by those who practice their sadhana with the desire to experience delight in the world. It's said that the Mahavijas can give you whatever you crave, whether it's the highest form of liberation or a life of wealth, auspicious activities, and pleasures. Kamala represents the auspicious worldly life. And in that sense, she's an expression that actually comes to everyone who follows the path of the Mahavijas. Because even in very, very evolved states of realization, the Shakti that unfolds within you is going to give you an experience of what in the Shiva Sutras is called Loka Ananda, the bliss of the physical plane of existence, because she is not only higher states of subtle realization, she is also this world. So right now we're going to meditate on the goddess who above all others epitomizes the power of desire, the power of longing itself. Lalita Tripura Sundari, the playful beauty of the three cities. Lalita presides over both the realm of worldly pleasure, bhoga in Sanskrit, and the world of moksha or liberation. And the three cities, the Tripura, as we said, are the waking state, the dream world, and the world of deep sleep. Lalita is the power of the fourth state, which we enter in deep meditation, in which we discover can pervade all these other states. So the realization of Lalita Tripura Sundari is the realization of that pure, blissful perception that can allow us to be fully awake in every state of consciousness. She's the beauty of the world. And if you think of how the world looks to you when you're in love, when you're just in that early stage of love where everything is just irradiated with your love, that's Lalita. Lalita is also intuitive knowledge. And if you look at her form, at her picture, which is actually on the private area of the website, so you'll be able to see her. And she's also, her picture is also in my book. So Lalita is exquisitely beautiful. Her color is rosy red. She has large breasts and delicate features. She has four hands in which she holds a bow made of sugar cane, a sheaf of flower arrows, a noose, and a goad, an elephant, you know, the kind of hooked implement that's used to drive elephants. The arrows are the arrows of love, which can pierce your heart with infatuation or with ecstatic devotion to the divine. The noose is the power of her Shakti, which can bind you to Maya or bind you so closely to her divine form that you're never, ever distracted from your experience of the absolute bliss. She works in both ways, for Maya and for liberation. And the color, the quality, the expression on her face, all of this embodies her form as one of the hymns says, she's as solidified bliss. Her form is solidified bliss. And in her sadhana, the sadhana of Lalita Tripura Sundari, the life force energy is kindled in the Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine through the activity of the goddess Bhairavi, and you know, then drawn up through the central channel to the crown. And there in the crown, it said, Lalita unites with her consort Shiva in his form as Kameshwara, the Lord of Desire. And in their union is the experience of full tantric self-realization, which kindles a bliss that then falls down through your body and irradiates your body with divine awareness. So there, among the ways to invoke Lalita Tripura Sundari is a meditation in which we actually bring that energy up through the spine. But today we're going to practice bringing her in as the force of grace who will allow us to really seat ourselves in the Shakti of her truly divine and profoundly awakening energy. So you can begin by placing yourself in an upright posture. Allowing the breath to flow easily through your nostrils. And we're going to silently repeat a mantra, one of the mantras that's related to Lalita Tripura Sundari. It's the mantra that I mentioned earlier, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Om Aim Hrim Shrim. And I'll repeat it, and you can imagine the mantra just flowing in with the inhalation, flowing into your heart, and then flowing through your body with the exhalation. Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Inhaling, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Exhaling, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Inhaling, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Exhaling, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Now, with your eyes closed, imagine that the form of the goddess Lalita is seated before you. You might imagine her floating in the air in front of you, somewhat larger than life, slender, delicate. Her breasts are bare. Her skin is luminous and rosy. She wears a red silk garment around her waist. Her eyes are large, fringed by long lashes. She's smiling, and her smile reveals teeth like pearls. As she sits in the air in front of you, you just allow yourself to feel her presence. You don't have to envision her, but you can, you may. But just let yourself feel that her presence is there in front of you. And that she holds complete liberating grace in the form of alluring sweetness. However you may be feeling at this moment, the sweetness of Lalita is present there for you. And you can begin to inhale her. Feeling that as you inhale, you're drawing into yourself the very subtle power of radiance, fascination, and wisdom. You feel her light. Flowing in through your breath into the heart. And as you draw in the light of Lalita Tripura Sundari into the heart, imagine that her grace is dispelling the wounds of being misunderstood, washing away your fear, your timidity, your anger. And you simply allow her love as a rosy radiance to expand through your heart, recognizing that within her light is compassion and kindness of the highest and deepest sort. As you inhale and exhale with the light of the goddess, you allow her to remind you that everything within the field of your experience is connected. That her kindness, her radiance, is yours. Begin to be aware also that the goddess third eye is emanating the same subtle rosy light, filled with the power of her discernment, her pure awareness. And you can inhale her light into your own third eye, into the space, into the center between your eyebrows. And as you inhale and exhale, you draw in the light of the goddess's third eye, her awakened wisdom, into your own head, into your brain, and feel it suffusing your brain. Now allow yourself to bring your attention down towards your belly, towards the core of your pelvis, and feel the rosy light of the goddess flowing from her belly into yours. And feel how her her light, her sweetness, her grace fills your whole lower body with enlivening power. Clearing the blocks, the wounds that are held in your belly and pelvis. Nourishing you from her light. Now sense the radiance of the goddess Lalita now pouring into your body through the pores. You're just allowing yourself to open your body and take her inside. Your breath draws in particles of the goddess. Your exhalation allows you to experience her as an energy flowing through your whole body. And you feel the empowerment the divine kindness the profound confidence and the recognition of your unbreakable oneness with the goddess. So as we close, please allow yourself to sit with the recognition that whatever degree you've allowed yourself to be infused with the goddess's energy, she will expand within you and reveal to you whatever it is that you need to know to be freed of. To have awakened in this moment of your life. And with great love, we bring this moment together to a close. You'll be receiving a homework assignment. And may the goddess's blessings be with you throughout the evening, throughout the day, working her miracles of kindness and awareness in every part of your life. Namaste.